CMC. I'm Mike Mongiorno. I'm here today with Mr. Vin Forte.
Oh, my God.
Vin, thank you so much for being here.
No, thank you for being here. This is my house.
Yes, lovely, a lovely abode.
Yeah.
Well, I haven't been here in a long time.
Yeah.
We got a little Star Trek going on the screen there, and just so much pornography. Just
I know. Just piles of walls and walls.
I mean, did you put this out because you knew I was coming, or?
Wow, well, you knew I was coming.
Oh, this is how we're starting. So today's episode is about Star Trek, the original series, yes. TOS.
Yeah, as the hipsters call it.
Yes.
It's like people who call Curb Your Enthusiasm just Curb.
Curb. You guys watch Curb? I do see kind of, I'm new to Star Trek fandom. Mm. I'm a new Trekkie. I don't mind Trekkie. You don't need to call me a Trekker. I don't think I'm better than anybody.
No.
As I've said before on the show, I've seen all the films. Actually, that's not true. I haven't seen a couple of
Nemesis.
I haven't seen Nemesis. Was there another one besides Nemesis? It's Generations, First Contact, Nemesis,
Insurrection, and Nemesis.
All right, I haven't seen Insurrection and Nemesis.
You haven't seen the one where it's just all people dressed in browns and beige.
Yeah, I have not seen those. But I've seen everything else, and I've seen a handful of episodes of The Next Generation, but I never saw the original series. Star Trek, and it was something I always wanted to do, and it was always something that I was like, one day I'm going to do this when the time is right, because I knew the time had to be right, because I knew that it's 79 episodes, and they're hour-long episodes.
Yeah,
that, you know, it's a show from 1966, so it has a sort of 1966 pace to it.
Well, people think that there's like a lot of baggage to it. People go, oh, well, you know, if you're going to start with Star Trek, you know, why don't you jump right into Next Gen? And then...
Well, this is exactly my point, because I have a list here of things that surprised me.
Okay.
Listener, you might be saying, Mike, Star Trek is like the beginning of modern fandom. What possibly could you have to say about Star Trek?
Right.
Well, number one, don't talk to me that way. Watch your mouth. Number two, what we're doing this episode is we have Vin, who has seen it all, big fan of Star Trek.
Yeah.
Me, a fairly new, a novice. And as somebody who lives in the Western world, who lives in the world where obviously I am a pop culture man-child, I still have many ideas. I understand references. I understand homages. Star Trek is in the ether. So what was interesting to me with watching the series was all the ways in which it was not what I thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
And the ways that it stacked up against what people have told me forever.
Right.
Me and Vin have also put together a little list. I asked Vin, can you put together a list of your personal favorite episode, what you think the best episode is, what you think the worst episode is, what you think the stupidest episode is, and the episode that surprised you the most.
And overrated.
The most overrated episode, right. We have the titles for them, but we will describe them a little bit. And then I just have thoughts. There's things about it that just like, this was not at all what I thought. I'll give you one right off the bat before we even get into our list.
Okay.
The Trouble with Tribbles. Not an episode about Tribbles. That's the B plot.
Right.
It's an episode about a Romulan spy and grain.
Right. Not like all... the Tribbles get into like a grain silo.
Right. It's not at all about Tribbles. The Tribbles are like a joke beast. The fact that it's called Trouble with Tribbles is really not even a good title, because it's just like...
They're a running B plot.
Right. It's like... If you called, like, the Wizard of Oz, like, dealing with slippers, like, okay, I guess, like, but there's a lot of other shit going on. Like,
yeah.
The main plot is not about Tribbles. It's not truly about the trouble with Tribbles.
No.
Despite with the
They do cause trouble.
Yes, they do. And, you know, it is the introduction of them.
Right.
But I went in, and I always believed... You know, from living in this world and seeing references and
Tribbles
and Beastie Boy songs.
Yeah.
That, this is going to be all about Tribbles. And then when the episode ended up not really being about them, I was like, okay. And I've got plenty more insights like that. So here we go. Let me start by saying this. I liked it a lot.
Yeah.
I liked it a lot. I was a little worried. I've tried things before. I've said famously on the show that I tried to get into X-Files and it just didn't click with me.
Well, you also have a habit of, like, you'll get into it
40 years later.
Well, like, we'll tell you, like, oh, you would really like this. You should really get into it. And you'll try it on, and you're like, nah, it's not that good. But then, like, you're right, like, 10 years later, you'll be like, this is my favorite thing ever.
Yeah. I'm good. I'm the guy who shows up to a party and is like, hey, you guys want to talk about season one of Game of Thrones? And,
yeah.
And that's, like, in 2022.
Hey, who saw Heat?
There's a Heat 2 book, by the way. I don't know if
saw that. What a weird
Michael Mann doing something. So I did like it. What's your personal favorite episode, Vin?
My favorite episode is the Corbomite maneuver.
Ooh, okay.
Because that is like it's very quintessential Star Trek.
Let me say, I have this on my list of things that surprised me, because the most famous thing of this is the Clint Howard as the little weird alien guy.
Yeah, Baylock, little
that's
baby.
That's just a button. That's just a twist ending. Well, that's not the episode.
Well, that brings up a bigger point that you were just alluding to with Star Trek, which is if you only have like a cursory knowledge of Star Trek, you kind of, and this is a problem that I think a lot of franchises are going to start having now that we're in like knee deep in meme culture.
Yeah.
Where like, you know, the memes, like, you know, the picture of Kirk like covered in tribbles and like holding one of them,
right?
You know, Clint Howard as the baby,
right?
You know, like all these sort of hallmarks,
right?
But like, you have to actually sit down. It's like when you hear a song too many times and it gets overplayed,
right?
And then you actually like give it an honest chance or like listen to the full album, and you're like, okay, now I get like why this was a big thing.
And I always find this fascinating. Like a couple years ago, I was reading a lot of Edgar Allan Poe, and I read The Telltale Heart. And I was like, okay, this is a story about a guy who buries somebody and he hears the heartbeat. That's like half a page. It's all really about an obsession and him wanting to kill the guy. So what the thing is known for is like such a small percentage of it.
Right.
What the Corbomite maneuver really is like a really good military kind of master and commander type episode about like, you know, I don't know how would you put it?
Like a
strategy and
almost like a game of chicken. It's a game of brinksmanship is what it is.
Yeah. And then in the end, like the weird button is like, okay, like you beat me, come on in here, and it's just a crazy guy.
Yeah, it's just a little baby. Like you're led to believe it's like this big monster the whole episode.
Right, because it's weird monster guy.
Yeah, it's like a weird monster face that they keep putting on screen.
Right,
and it's about like this ship and. Oh, the ship is going to blow up the Enterprise, and every time they try to get away, the ship is, like, following their every move.
Yeah.
And then, you're right, like, but, again, it's in the details. Like, we can't do it justice really talking about it. Like, you have to see, like, the little moments, the character moments.
Yeah.
Like, there's a whole subplot that I love about the episode where there's just a random crewman who plays a big role.
Yeah.
Where he's trying to, like, second-guess Kirk. Because he's like, what are you doing? Like, we gotta, like, blow this ship up.
Yeah.
And he's, like, talking to Spock about it. And, like, there's this great, like, interplay between all of them.
Yeah, it's one of those, what's the Romulan episode? The Dagger?
Balance of Terror.
That's another one similar, where it's just, like, we're on the bridge, and we've got, like, it's a standoff at sea.
Right.
And how do you have the balls to maneuver this correctly?
Right.
Do you
know who's going to blink first?
Who, like, do you know what bluffs to call and what bluffs to make? And, you know, this sounds like this feels like it's obvious, but I think it is a hot take. This show's good.
Yeah.
And that's a hot take because people act like it's not. Like, obviously, it's the most famous thing ever, right? But when you talk to people about Star Trek, they talk about it almost like they talk about early Doctor Who. The amount of people that have told me, oh, you want to get into Star Trek? Don't watch the originals. Oh, no.
Yeah, they have like some right big caveat that. Where they're like, well, you got to go in knowing that like it's a little dry. You're not going to like it that much.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
Like, I don't know. Like, even the stuff that we're going to talk about that's like not good.
Yeah.
Like, quote unquote, not good is still like entertaining in a campy way.
Yeah. I mean, the only way it's very good writing and very good performances. So the only thing that just doesn't hold up is the special effects. And if you're
if you could put yourself back in that
right
time, like I'll watch some old episodes and I'll be like, oh, it's kind of like an interesting effect. Like that's really clever how they did that.
The only things story-wise that stand out to me is, like, some, even though it's sort of progressively leaning, like, sometimes there'll be, like, misogyny that they're not aware of. That. Yeah, there's a lot of, like, stuff of 1966 that's baked into it that it's not consciously aware of. But other than that, like, it's good. It's, like, genuinely good. Like, you could take these same scripts and remake them. I think they'd be just as good. But people act like it's fucking garbage. Star Trek fans act like it's garbage. Like, oh, just completely blow past it. And it's like, no, it's, like, actually very good.
Yeah.
Like, it blew my mind. Now, I did watch the Star Trek TOS trademark, which is what they call the redone version where all of the exterior of the ship are CGI. But unlike what Lucas did with the special editions, it's not gratuitous.
No, it's not gratuitous.
It doesn't cut into... there's no story changes.
No.
Like, Lucas would be like, let's add 900 more stormtroopers, and, oh, there's not enough people in fucking Tatooine. Let's
make this door 15 times its size reason.
Yeah, like, there's none of that. It's basically... And within the show, there's very, very little tinkering. Very, very little.
They really took a scalpel. Like, they really did it, like, very gingerly.
Yeah.
Because... And I don't know if they do this now. I mean, I don't think so, because I have Paramount Plus, and they don't currently do this, though I wish they would. But when they put it out on DVD, when you bought the DVDs and you popped it in, you could choose which version to watch.
Interesting. No, it seems hard to find the unaltered originals, which is a shame. But I didn't feel like I'm not really getting it.
Right, I wasn't watching it, and I'm like, oh, why'd they have to do that? It just takes me out of the whole thing.
Right. Yeah, the Corbin and were very good. So that's your personal favorite.
Yeah.
My personal favorite is the Galileo 7 from season 1. This is like the first, like, really big Spock episode.
Yeah.
And it's an episode where Spock and a landing party take the Galileo, which is their, the little craft. Like, when they don't beam down, they take the little landing craft or whatever. They go down on this planet, and there's, like, some monster around that's threatening them. And it's, who's it? It's Spock, Scotty, Bones, some red shirts. But Kirk isn't in it. Kirk is on the bridge. So Spock is in command, and it's a lot of... It feels like this was an early episode to be like, this is the episode... We know who Spock was, but this is the episode to, like, really dig into who Spock is. We'll see Spock try to make decisions. We'll see logic versus Bones's emotion and stuff. So it's
right, like, and they, like, question Spock. Now he's the leader on the ground.
Right. And... what happens a lot in the show is Bones will get mad at Spock because Spock doesn't get freaked out by things. He does everything logically. Like, in this episode, somebody dies and they're like, we got to bury him. And Spock's like, that would be a fucking waste of time. Yeah. Like, we've got a time limit going on. We've got a ticking clock. So we've got to get the ship going before the ticking clock's up.
And Bones is just like, give the man some dignity.
And it's like, and he's like, there's literally no time for this.
Yeah.
And it's good because it's the kind of episode where, as you're watching it, you know, you kind of see both parts. I was like, yeah, fuck it, Spock's right.
Yeah.
But I could see someone else easily being like, oh, come on. Let's have a little heart.
Especially in the 1960s. Like,
Yeah.
We got to send this man to heaven.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, how's he going to go to heaven if he's on another planet?
Gonna bury him under some rocks.
So, yeah, the Galileo 7, I think, is... it's not a bio episode because they are on a planet, but a lot of it is in this little... But what would you call the craft? The shuttle craft? The little...
Oh, just the shuttle craft.
Yeah. Which they didn't like to use a lot because it wasn't made to scale. So, like, there was you'd see them in a set, but then when they were outside of it, you could clearly see that they were taller than it.
Yeah.
It was made by the same company that made the model Enterprise toy. Like, they made a deal, like, you make the toys and blah, blah, blah. And, By the way, I should say, as I was watching this, I read a good book called Phasers on Stun by Ryan Britt, who also wrote Luke Skywalker Can't Read. And so I get a lot of good information from that. It's a pretty good book. You know, a lot of Star Trek fans know this. As interesting as the beaming is, it's just a way to not have to do the landing. And it's just an easy story way of getting people to and from.
Right. Now, you mentioned Luke Skywalker, and we're not here to talk about Star Wars. But if I sometimes I like to throw out some fun things for you to go look at online.
Yeah.
There's a trend going on. This is a complete sidebar, but there's a trend going on right now where people are doing like the ends of movies and doing it, but like if it came out in 2007, which is a very specific year.
Yeah,
it's not
like,
oh, we're doing this in the 80s. And the whole template of the meme is that they play What I've Done by Linkin Park at the end of movies. And like this guy's done a bunch of them, and he even did, he's like, fine, I'll do a Batman one. And he did Batman Begins, which came out 2 years before that song.
Yeah. That's pretty fun. That's awesome. Yeah, that's damn accurate. What do you think is the best episode?
I think Balance of Terror.
Interesting.
Owing to the fact that I like the Corbomite maneuver, that's in a similar boat. But it sets up so much for the series.
Yeah.
And I think if you're someone who, like, it's a great episode in and of itself.
Yeah.
But if you're someone who, like, did never go back to TOS.
Yeah.
And are like, what's the big deal? Like, that's the episode you should check out.
Yeah. And this is the episode that they kind of remade with the season finale of Strange New Worlds.
Yeah.
Where they did a sort of story of what if Pike doesn't die and stays the captain of the Enterprise? How would he handle it opposed to Kirk?
Yeah.
And because he's actually a better person than Kirk, he fucks it up because he has more heart. And Kirk is much more of a hard-as-nails badass. And he tries to do the nice thing, and he fucks it up and starts a war and ends up getting Spock killed.
Yeah, that's actually one of the better... Like, when people talk about, like, oh, they should never... Like, shows that are prequels or sequels should never, like, straight up remake an old episode.
Yeah.
Like, this is an exception to that rule. Like, that was a really well done...
Yeah, and it serves the purpose of...
What's a bow on his arc for that season.
Yeah, yeah, like, this is... He's not gonna try to save himself. He is accepting that he has to die. And it makes sense now. So, yeah, The Balance of Terror, it's the first episode of Romulan in it, right?
Yeah.
And there's a big... It's a big reveal in the show that they look like Vulcans, because then people start being racist towards Spock.
Right. Like immediately racist.
They're like, motherfucker.
Like, you fucking knew this whole time? He's like, yeah. No.
Yeah, that fucking guy, whoever the helmsman is in that episode, he's a random
really
dude.
Went after him. But it's funny because in the original series, the Romulans did really just look like Vulcans.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas they definitely, I mean, they always still look like Vulcans, but like, definitely, they became more defined as the series went on.
Yeah.
Because in this one, they get... You know who's the guy that plays the head Romulan in that episode? He plays Sarek as well, Spock's dad.
Really? So that's what you gotta love about old shit. Like,
where
there's
they reuse people?
Yeah, yeah, they reuse people. They're not interested in canon. In, like, either the first or the second episode, Spock says something about, in his bloodline, there's some humans. And then, like, four episodes later, he's like, oh, I'm half human. Because we figured it out as we wrote these episodes. Like, even in, like, one of the early episodes, they don't say Federation. They say something else. Like, the
conglomeration.
Yeah, yeah. And then it's like, you could see them figuring it out. But
Star Trek is also notorious for, like, oh, this actor's popped up in, like, 5 of the 12 series. Like,
yeah, yeah.
Like, Gene Roddenberry's wife, Majel Barrett, who plays Nurse Chapel, it also shows up in Next Generation and subsequent series as the voice of the comm system.
Right. She's also in the original pilot as Number One, who was played by Rebecca Romijn in Strange New Worlds. But it's so funny, in the Menagerie episode, they just have her as another character while they're, like, watching it. But you know what? That reminds me of something else that surprised me. The movies make it like, this is our crew. Kirk, Spock, Bones, Scotty, Uhura...
It's really three of them.
Right. It's and Sulu and Chekhov. Chekhov isn't in season one. Sulu is barely in season two. Uhura is barely in it. Nurse Chapel, I think, is a bigger character than Uhura.
I would say so.
And she gets like one scene in the movie. Who really got fucked was what's her name? What's the actress's name? Grace Lee Whitney, who played Rand. Yeoman Rand.
Oh.
She's all in season one, and she's like Kirk's personal yeoman. She's like, is his secretary, and she's like in love with him. And they wrote her out after season one because they were like, we want Kirk to be able to fucking kiss every woman that he meets. So we don't want him tied down with like
family.
With like, yeah, because it looks like in the first season that they're gonna make them hook up. She also is in one scene in the movie. It's so funny to me. It's like
they're like, see, we got everyone in.
Yeah, it's like. It's so interesting how that got solidified later, and then when you look back, it's like, no, it's like, Sulu's barely in this show. He's a background guy. Even Uhura, and I don't want to take away from the context of the time, I knew that it was really special for people to see an African-American.
No, but she had very little to do.
She really
show.
Didn't have a lot to do. I mean, there's like two, she has like two big episodes. Like, there's not even a lot of away missions that she's on.
No.
There's like
no,
she's
not at all.
The one with the one mirror with the evil world. She's on that, and she's on the one in season three where they kiss.
Right, and that's another like big moment.
Right, that's another big moment that I was surprised because I thought they kissed, and in fact they're being controlled by aliens, and the aliens make them kiss.
Right, so it's like no,
they're not even kissing by their own volition.
Yeah,
and it's kind of obscured,
People make it seem like, and it was a big deal. Like, let's not downplay it.
The South was like, we're not going to air this.
Right. But, like, there's a difference between, oh, we're going to have these two characters who are black and white fall madly in love, and, oh, these are two people controlled by aliens that, like, don't even know that they're kissing.
Right. Yeah.
If anything, it's you could make the argument it's kind of a slap in the face, like, oh, these evil aliens are making the whites and blacks like commingle.
Yeah. So I'll tell you what I think the best episode is. And this might be a little shocking. A Piece of the Action.
The one where they go to the
gangster
to the gambling
one. They go to the planet that
Chicago.
Well, it's the planet where somebody left a book of the history of Chicago gangsters, and this whole culture grew up around that book. So it's basically like Al Capone, Chicago gangster time, but on another planet, which Star Trek did a lot. It's like they wanted to be a time travel show, but wasn't. Yeah. Like, oh, this planet's like ancient Rome. This planet's like if the Nazis. It's like, okay, all right. So, yeah, that's one that gets made fun of a lot, and you see memes of it, and you think, oh, this is gonna be so stupid. It's fun, it's funny, the guest stars are really interesting, the plot just snip, 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 goes right along from here to there to there. We're gonna escape from this, and I'm gonna fight this guy.
It's a fun episode.
It's a super, super good episode. It's like, if you want to be entertained, it's such a good episode.
And you know it's a good episode because they went back to that as an idea, like, several times in later series. Like,
yeah.
Because basically the gist of the episode, like you said, is they got to figure out, like, what's going on here. Is this also the one where he reads them the Constitution?
Oh.
I forget which one that is.
That might be the weird one with, what's the one where they meet, like, the Greek god? Do you remember that?
Basically, there's some episode,
where
look it up.
Yeah, he gets very, yeah.
He reads them the Constitution at the end. And he literally the United States Constitution, not the Federation Constitution or the Earth Constitution.
Yeah. A Piece of the Action. I think it's really, I don't know. Is it the most emblematic of the whole series? I don't know. Probably I'd say, you know, the Corbinite Maneuver would be a good, like, if you only have to watch one, but I think it's the best made episode.
Yeah.
What do you think is the worst episode?
Worst episode? What did I have for work? It's worse than stupidest. I don't want to.
Rich, I think you're very different.
Yes.
Because let me say this. I think a lot of it is stupid, but I think it knows it's stupid.
Yes.
It's like the old Batman show, where I think people look back now and they go, oh, it was so stupid. You can't watch that stuff. And it's like, they kind of knew that they were dumb. They were having more fun than you think.
Yeah.
And they were trying to sell color TVs, which is why it looks like
right.
That.
So my worst is Turnabout Intruder.
The very last episode.
Because it really felt... I know people wanted more, but it's like it really felt like they were running on fumes at that point.
See, I actually really liked it, but I feel it's very flawed because of how incredibly sexist it is.
It is. It's
incredibly sexist.
It's a huge thing in its detriment as well. It is... Basically, the gist of it is it's a body swap episode.
You bet it is.
It's... Kirk and a lady wants to take over the Enterprise.
Of course, she's an old flame of his.
Old flame, but also, it's not just that she wants to take over. They frame it as, oh, a woman should not want to be the captain of a ship.
Right. It starts on the right foot where she's like, you know, it's really hard to get your own command as a woman in the Federation. And Kirk's like, you know what? It's true. That's something they got to work on. So it's like, okay, this is starting on the right foot. But then the second the body swap happens, Kirk is like swishing around, like trying to act feminine.
Yeah.
In this really insulting way. Actually, I think the actress does a better job of being Kirk than he does of being her. Because he's just being a big joke. And she wants to kill Kirk. It's all so she can have power, she can have command. It's like,
and again, the final episode of the series, yeah, like this is what we're going out on.
Right, right. It's not, well, it's, this is before like contemporary shows where like there's an ending. Like this is just an episode just of the week. An episode, and oops, we stopped making them. Yeah. That's interesting. You say that's the worst. Because I found it entertaining. Anytime there's a trial, I like it. Whenever there's like a let's put you on trial. I like that episode where, this isn't on my list, but an episode where, like, Kirk is, like, obsessed with the fucking thing that he saw when he was younger.
Yeah.
And he's, like, acting erratic and there's no reason. And they're like, you're being fucking crazy. I've got a choice for the worst episode, but then I have an honorable mention for the worst episode. I think the worst episode is the season one episode, The Alternate Factor. It's not even bad in any good way. It's just mind-numbingly boring. Do you even remember it by me saying it?
I don't. And that is like, there are like a handful of episodes in the original series that are like that, where it's like
the alternate
generic sci-fi episode.
The Alternate Factor is like a guy who like they meet on a planet and he's like, "Oh, this guy's crazy. We got to get him." And then like he is the other guy and he keeps going back and forth in his body. And then, like, he's got a ship that looks like Rick's ship from Rick and Morty. It's just, a reviewer reviewed it, like, years later and said it's, like, one of the most unappealing, unsatisfying stories in the history of television. It's just bad. It's just not good at all. Like, I found myself, like drifting away watching it. Like, this is so boring.
Yeah.
My honorable mention is the last episode of season two, Assignment Earth, which is a backdoor pilot for Gary Seven.
Yeah, Gary Seven.
Who's like, he was gonna be like an alien on Earth, kind of Doctor Who-y. He was an alien on Earth. The whole thing is just very, very, it's like very hat on a hat. It's a backdoor pilot.
And it's
Terry Garr's in it. She was gonna be like his companion. And it's
it's not what you want.
It's real bad. Like, it's real backdoor pilot-y. Like, Kirk and Spock basically, like, look into the camera and go, well, we'll leave you here, but I'm sure you're going to have some great adventures coming up yourself. Like, stay tuned.
Yeah, it's basically like Simpsons spinoff showcase.
Yeah, yeah. Like,
your old friend The Simpsons might even stop by for a cameo.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. What do you think is the stupidest episode?
Cat's Paw.
We're in agreement. We both did it.
It is. And
it is dumb.
It's dumb, but like there are some unintentional laughs in it.
Well, there's a
like,
giant cat.
You know, just going to say, like, because the way they film this giant cat is like classic, like, we're here and we're just going to blow up footage of a cat.
Right.
Right. And they keep bringing the cat out because basically, and also this could have been like, if not for the unintentional hilarity, I think it could have been like one of the worst.
Right.
It's the closest thing Star Trek ever came to a holiday themed episode.
Right. And I love Halloween, and this could be a Halloween episode, but it just doesn't even commit to that.
No, well, it doesn't commit to anything. The whole thing unravels by like 30 minutes in because it's one of those episodes of science fiction that really get you because it ends at, like, the big reveal is that stuff is just happening around them.
Yeah.
Where, like, so they go to this castle on a planet, and they're like, what the fuck's this castle doing here?
It's Count Chocula's castle.
Yeah, it's like Count Chocula's castle.
And but don't forget, when they first get to the planet, they see the three witches from Macbeth.
Right. And that's exactly who they're trying to be. It's the three witches from Macbeth.
Yeah.
Then they go in this castle, and there's a guy there, and he's, like, testing them. He's got, like, jewels, and he's like, do you want my jewels? And Kirk's like, no, I don't want your jewels. We don't need money.
They get tied up in the dungeon.
They get tied up in a dungeon, And then it's like you realize that the cat is a woman. Yeah. So it's like this guy and this woman. But then here's where it unravels, because like then you realize the story isn't really about them. It's about like this guy and the woman, like,
yeah,
and this weird like tension. Are they a married couple? Is he her slave? Like,
yeah.
And then by the end of it, I think like Spock comes up with some solution.
Sure.
And then at the end of it, they just turned into like weird caterpillars.
Oh,
and die.
Yeah. Yeah, that's actually the most interesting part of it, because like they're like, oh, here's what they really look like, and they look a little bit like in the 1980s there was a big thing where they were like toy sunflowers that you played music in front of and it would move to the it would dance along to the music. They also had a Coke can like this was a big thing in the 80s. That's kind of what they look like. But also kind of like stick figure men, like the Blair Witch stick figure men. Yeah, it's awful. It's basically a You're in an Illusion episode, but
right,
the illusion is just like all over the place. It's like, all right, if you're gonna be gothic, like just commit to being spooky gothic.
Yeah, and it's also the first episode with Chekhov.
Yeah, and he has that awful wig in the first couple
episodes.
Yeah,
he's got a really bad wig.
They put him in a Beatles wig.
Oof.
Because the attempt with Chekhov, when he comes in season two, is he's supposed to be like younger. He's like a very young guy, and he's supposed to be like kind of a funny young character put into the show. And so they specifically want him to have like a Beatles like haircut. It's 1966, but he didn't have it yet. So they just put a horrible wig on him. And he's not in season one. So he's not in the space seat episode.
No.
So when he recognizes Khan.
And you know what makes that line even worse? Because he goes, I never forget a face.
Yeah, and it's like, okay, well, you didn't meet him then because he wasn't in fucking show.
But that's right. Also like, maybe Chekhov was somewhere else on the ship.
Sure, and, yeah, sure, he was doing something. Yeah. Cat's Paw is pretty bad. While we're here, we could do some more. I mean, there's a lot of stupid episodes. Spock's brain is pretty dumb.
I was almost going to put Spock's brain on there, but it just was not as dumb as Cat's Paw.
You know what it is? It's not the worst episode. It's just the ending is so stupid. Well, it's a very stupid conceit. Someone straight up steals Spock's brain. And we don't mean mind. We mean like his brain.
Like, you see his brain.
Right. And they're like, we gotta go get his brain back. And in the end, McCoy is like, he's like,
he's playing the brain back in, but like,
he's on some drug that makes him smarter.
A very weird episode.
Yeah. And Spock is awake and he's like, I can help you. So Spock is like talking him through it.
Yeah. And it's like, how can you do this? Spock is like, oh, we could still stay alive without our brains for 5 days.
Right.
Something.
Right.
Like,
yeah. It's often cited as a stupid episode. I mean, there are some fun episodes that I think aren't stupid. Like I said, like I think the best episode is Piece of the Action. But like there's the episode where they go to the pleasure planet where it's like fucking Easter bunnies and shit.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it
what pleasure?
It can get stupid. It can get stupid. There's usually like one or two episodes. Well, no, the problem is this was 1966, so we're doing 24 episodes.
You gotta pump them out. You gotta figure something out.
That's a lot of TV.
And if someone's got an idea and you gotta fill time, it's like, yeah, fine, let's do it. Spock's brain.
It's surprising. Like, you'll see two episodes in a row that are similar, and it's like, why did they put him that way? Like, were they just breaking the same idea? Yeah, yeah. Okay, what's the episode? I don't know if you have an answer for this because you have seen it all before. I have a category, the episode that surprised me. This is a tie for me. It's the Corbinite Maneuver because, like I said, I thought it was all going to be about Clint Howard's character, and it's not.
Right.
It's literally just a little cherry on top. And the other one is Let That Be Your Last Battlefield, which is the episode where people have... With Frank Gorshin from Riddler from Batman, where some people have white on one side of the face and black on the other, and other people in the same planet have it switched. And the reason it surprised me was it's always pointed out as like really obvious. Like, it's always pointed out as an example of Star Trek at its most heavy-handed. But despite its very, very obvious metaphor, I think it's actually a good episode.
It's not terrible.
No, it's not.
It's good.
Frank Gorshin's good in it. And the slow burn of like You know, first he's like, Frank Gorshin's like, oh, I'm a police officer and he's a criminal. He's a seditionist. He is a terrorist. He's creating, you don't understand. Like, we have to try and kill this man. This man, this man has caused so much damage. And like, it's not until like halfway through the episode where he's like, he's a filthy white on the right side of his face. Like, if like, it finally gets racist.
Filthy half white.
Yeah. So it's like, it ends up being smarter than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
And it's a season three episode, which...
Season three is definitely the weakest of all of those.
You think so? I was going to say one. Because one takes
really?
One takes a minute to get there. You know, the first chunk of episodes are not great.
You know what it is? I guess I'm looking at it is like when you add up all the like notable episodes.
Yeah.
One has... like, it's like... The bell curve, I think, goes like end of season one through half of season two...
Yeah.
Then it kind of like drifts a little.
Season
bit.
Two, I think, is undoubtedly the best. It doesn't have all my favorite episodes, but
they're off and
it's
running.
It's consistently good. Like, yeah, they figure it out in season two. Season one, in the beginning of season one, and I think I've read this as well, so this isn't my insight, but it's kind of trying to be like an anthology show. Like, this spaceship will take you to a planet and we'll see what's happening on this planet. And by season two, they were like, no, what's interesting is Kirk, Spock, and Bones. These three and their dynamic is what's interesting, and they're the characters that we care about.
Well, it's funny that Roddenberry didn't learn that lesson, because in the background we got Next Generation playing, and specifically season one, Roddenberry had that whole conceit where he was like, oh, none of the problems can be interpersonal.
Right.
And they dumped that pretty quickly behind his back, but like he very much was like, no, like, well, this is the, you know, 23rd century, like, we don't have these kinds of issues anymore.
We don't have drama.
Yeah, we don't have
hour long drama. Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because that would be a good little sidebar to take. So something that Star Wars fans have gotten used to is the idea that, like, you love Lucas because he made the first movie, but everyone agrees that the best one is Empire Strikes Back, which is the original of the original three that Lucas had the least to do with.
Mm-hmm.
So always baked into the cake was this idea of, thank you for making it, but it's kind of better without you.
Right.
And I know people will argue with me in this. I think the sequel trilogy, even though I hate Rise of Skywalker, is by and large better films than the prequel trilogy.
Mm.
Roddenberry's a similar thing. I mean, Roddenberry...
When the movies came out, like,
after the first movie failed, they were like, fuck, get out of here. Like, they really pushed him out.
Yeah.
He, like, hated part two to the point where he leaked to the press that Spock died.
Yeah. Like, what a crazy son of a bitch. Like,
right.
He hated two and six are probably his least favorite. I mean, like,
so,
those
like,
are
the most fun ones. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He didn't like, he got so into the sauce of like the ideology of it.
It's my vision.
Right.
Like, at that time he was going to all these conventions. So it's probably like, from what you know, from stories you hear, like, it like fluffed up his ego quite a bit.
Yeah.
Where people talk about, even to this day, like, oh, this goes against like Gene's vision. It's like,
yeah,
fuck Gene's vision. Like,
thank
you for sure, but like, you gotta move the goalpost a little bit.
I'm a Disney adult, and as a Disney adult, one of the things that you hear in our little nerd communities is, Walt wouldn't do this, or Walt would not like that. And I always think, first of all, Walt's been dead for like half a century.
Right.
So he would be scared of a smartphone. Number two.
Right. Who knows what he would have
thought. Yeah. Number two, Walt. First of all, Walt died before the creation of Disney World. Walt never stepped foot in Disney World. Okay. Yeah. It's just named after him. Walt didn't like alcohol. He was like, no alcohol. Now they do serve alcohol. And some people really, when they started doing that, people were like, oh no, Walt wouldn't like. But it's like, okay, you can see why Walt didn't want to do that when he created Disneyland. But now that it has this cachet of, this is a serious place, you spend a lot of money and there are kids here, it's not a bacchanal. Like,
no.
They serve drinks. Like, it changed. Like, I get why Walt didn't want it. But Walt fucking made stupid mistakes. While Walt was alive, he let them put a lingerie store in Main Street in Disneyland called Wizard of Bras.
Wizard of Bras?
Yeah. And he was like, yeah, it's fun for the parents. And then people were like, this is fucking ridiculous. And they got rid of it quickly.
Imagine doing that today. You go to Epcot.
Oh, yeah.
Wizard of Bras. And
people would fucking flip out. So, you know, what would Walt do? What would Gene want?
you know, or even
Gene's dead and he's never coming back. Yeah. And if we want this franchise to continue,
yeah,
like you would never have gotten like what Deep Space Nine became.
No,
without
no,
Gene, because Gene was very much like, it's got to be on a starship. It's got to be this. It's got to be that. It's like you wouldn't have gotten most of what you have now.
Right, right. He would not like. I mean, it's funny. This was controversial. I say that with quotes because real people don't care, just nerds. But at Comic-Con, there was a William Shatner panel hosted by Kevin Smith, and somebody said, "What do you think of the new Star Trek shows?" And in his typical I'm an asshole Shatner way, was like, I think Gene Roddenberry would be sick to his stomach if he saw some of the stuff going on now. I think he'd be rolling in his grave. And it's like, maybe. But also, that doesn't really say much to me. Like, I don't know if that holds nothing with me. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, oh, you would have... Well, we don't know.
Right. It's also my resistance to the auteur theory. Right? There's Dorothea Fontana, right, who went on to DC Fontana, right? There's all these great writers... There's all these people that make Star Trek that aren't just him.
It's a collaborative effort. Like,
right.
And this is the same with a lot of like huge franchises. Like, I'm a huge Simpsons fan.
Right.
Matt Groening has, you know, outside of the obvious of he created the characters.
What does he have to do with it anymore?
Yeah, it's very little. Not only that, but like, you know, the golden years of the show, like, yeah. I'm more fan of like guys like Bill Oakley and John Swartzwelder.
Right, right.
Who like were showrunners and writers during that time, who like put in the jokes and the content and the character development.
Right, right, right. What do you think is the most overrated episode of Star Trek?
City on the Edge of Forever.
We are again in agreement.
Because
it's good.
Yeah, it's a good episode.
It's not bad.
But the way people, it's just like, again, this is all like the hype machine.
Yes.
Where it's like big hype machine, like whenever you hear
it's the
like
best episode,
like it's
ever.
The best episode. It's a good episode. It's a great episode.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. It's definitely a great episode.
But it's also not, to me, I guess you could say it's quintessential Star Trek because they did do episodes like that.
Yeah.
But to me, if someone's coming over and they want to see Star Trek for the first time and go like, what is this all about? That's not the episode I'm showing them.
Right.
Because it's mostly them in like the 1920s or 1940s.
Right. And this is the episode that was written by Harlan Ellison, although Harlan Ellison, they changed some of his scripts. So
yeah,
of course
and then he put
hated
out a, and then he put out a book that's like the real version of
right,
it.
Right, but honestly, what they changed isn't even...
It's
not
like negligible.
It's not inherent to the plot. The mostly what they changed is what gets them there. In the episode as it exists now, Bones
they
has
made,
a syringe of crazy juice.
Right,
and
like they made TV cuts where it's like, right. Where it's like, we can't spend all this time on the ship. They're already there. And then
right.
They jump in.
But,
and blah, blah.
Right. But Harlan Ellison was like, oh no, there's a drug dealer and that's how he goes crazy. It's like, all right, we don't need any of that. Yeah, look, they go back to the 40s. It's charming. You seeing Kirk and Spock working together like is like just having like, just doing labor work.
But it's a very simple story. Like, Kirk basically falls in love with a woman who is predestined to die in order for a chain of events to happen that's going to, I think, like, save the war or something. Something like that. She's very important. And
right,
she needs
to
die for things to happen.
The Nazis will win if this woman doesn't die, in a butterfly effect kind of thing.
Right. So
and she's played
episode...
by Joan Collins. And it's a very good guest role.
Oh,
they have
yeah.
good chemistry.
It's a good episode because the whole time, like, Kirk knows what he has to let not happen.
Yeah.
But he keeps, like, resisting and falling more in love with her.
Yeah. It's that thing of when people say it's the absolute greatest, or some people, like, no. It's been on lists of, like, the greatest episodes of anything. And it's like, it's kind of like when people say Blink is the best episode of Doctor Who. And it's like, that's
right.
A great episode.
But the
also,
doctor's in it for 5 seconds.
Right, it's nothing like what the show is. Like, I mean, it's just overrated.
Yeah, you said Doctor Who and it just popped up on TV.
I have an honorable mention also with this category. Yeah. I'm going to say the Space Seed.
Yeah.
Only because...
Yes.
It's
a whole lot of nothing happens in the middle of Space Seed.
Yeah, and the fact that it sets up
the second movie, Wrath of Khan, because Khan is in it. It's like you think, oh, this is gonna. They don't even really hate Khan that much. Like Khan's dick.
They give him his own planet.
Yeah, and they're like, we're gonna see. Khan's like pro toxic masculinity.
Yeah.
And Kirk is like, you know what? I'm gonna give you your own planet. You do the toxic masculinity thing. Yeah. Let me see how it works out for you.
Right.
And then he's like the worst guy ever when they meet him again in part two of the movie.
Right. Because in the movie they add more context. If you had only been left off at that episode,
right,
you would have thought, okay, everybody wins. He gets his own planet. Right. He gets to fall in love with that woman. But they add more context to it with the movie where Kirk never checked up on him.
Right. Yeah, and it's like if you look at the whole original series and you think, okay, for part two of the movies, we're going to sequelize an episode of the show, that's not at all the one I would pick.
No. Right?
I mean, there's a lot of other episodes I would go to before I do that. I mean, maybe they just wanted Ricardo Montalban again because he was an interesting character. But the Khan character is not even that good, I think, in the original episode.
No, he's not. Like you say, he's just a big sort of Napoleon archetype.
Yeah. So I have a list of thoughts that I came up with and some tropes. A lot of episodes go like this. They go to a planet that has a weird different culture. There's always a shady old man who has a smoke show daughter who's like, this is my smoke show daughter, Kirk. You might want to fuck her.
Hey, Kirk.
And then we find out that, like, the old man's a creep, and then everything's wrong. Oh, I never did
a surprising episode.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know you had one.
Yeah.
Please, let me hear it.
Private Little War.
Which one is that? Because
that is the episode where Kirk and McCoy land on a planet of, like, I think they're called, like, pre-Vulcans or something, but they're basically just there to be people, and they're kind of, like, indigenous, and they're peaceful. And they realize partway into the episode that the Klingons got to that planet first and armed them and basically taught them war.
Oh, yes.
Now, that episode is bogged down a little bit because there's a weird, like you were just saying, like trope with like a love subplot with a woman trying
There's so much of that.
But like the actual core, like the ending of the episode, I think is really good because up to that point, if you've just been watching Star Trek all the way through, you kind of think like, okay, they're going to figure a way out of this jam. They're going to do something.
Right.
But what ends up happening is Kirk ends up having to arm the other. There's like two tribes on the same planet.
Right.
Only one of them has weapons and he has to arm the other tribe because there's no like, there's no right way out of this. Like,
yeah.
If he doesn't teach them how to do war, like then they're just going to get steamrolled and just murdered.
Right. Yeah.
So like there's okay. There's no good ending.
So what makes that surprising to you? Because
there's no good ending. Like it was like a pretty bold choice for like a 60s TV show.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's a good point. And isn't like someone on the planet like someone who used to be in the Federation?
Yeah, like the head of that camp is like Kirk's old best friend.
And he's like, yeah, why don't you, what happened to you? Why don't you believe in the, yeah. Okay. Oh, very cool. Okay, two more things that I found surprising. Evil Spock. There is this, I don't know what you want to call it, a meme, a cultural idea of, oh, evil Spock, when you put a mustache on somebody, they're evil, right? This is evil Spock. And they're referring to the episode Mirror, Mirror, where they go to another universe that's like much more violent. Spock is the only one that's not that evil.
Right.
Evil Kirk is bad. Evil, everyone else is bad.
Because Spock has his logic.
Right. Evil Spock ends up helping the good guys get back to them. So I was like, ooh, the evil Spock episode, Spock's not evil. Even evil Spock isn't evil.
Yeah.
It's just like, how do things get misremembered culturally? It's so fascinating.
And the Mirror universe is interesting because, and this is something to put in your back pocket for like a year or two from now when you're done watching all of Star Trek, to go back and watch in order all the Mirror Universe episodes.
Mm-hmm.
Because stuff that happens in the Mirror Universe in the original series,
yeah,
and I guess you could put, I guess, Enterprise next to that because they have a big Mirror Universe, really fun Mirror Universe two-parter, ends up affecting the Mirror Universe episodes in Next Gen, in Deep Space Nine.
Oh, really?
Like, like, there's a whole history going on in the mirror universe.
Yeah.
That is, well, it's mirror universe. Like, it's mirror to ours. And, like, you see it, like, the more episodes in the mirror universe you watch,
wow,
the more it's like, oh, yeah, this is the history. Like, this happened back then, and, like, Kirk and his guys did this, and, like, now, like, you know, people, like, Deep Space Nine is a bunch of, I think, like, that was, like, their one a season. They would do a mirror universe episode. Really? And they would keep checking in on what, it's called the Terran Empire, not the Federation.
Oh, right. Yes. Oh, that's really interesting. Yeah. Well, so the next thing that's released is the animated series.
Yeah, which is...
What do you think of the animated series?
Yeah.
I kind of don't want to skip it.
Don't skip it. It's a... I think it'd be a cop-out to be like, it is what it is.
Yeah.
But, like, you've seen the style of animation.
Yeah. Oh, it's super, super...
It's super
limited.
Filmation kind of thing. But...
It's more of that original... crew kind of thing.
Right. It's almost like...
A season four.
Almost like a season four, but it's the closest to when there was a Star Wars wilderness period in the 90s.
Yeah.
And you would read, like, magazine articles about books coming out and stuff like that. And, or, like, you would see, like, a cover, some sort of official artwork that they had done for, like, a story. And it was like, wow, what is this world?
Yeah.
Like, it's so familiar, but there's, like, Han Solo's got a weird, he's fighting an otter? What is
this? Yeah, like, I know, like, isn't there, like, a lion character, like, who's, like, on the...
Yeah.
Like, they do some... What I'm interested in is
Scotty, they'd want to pay Scotty or something. Yeah. So, like, Ibrahim or Chekhov is not in it.
Oh, Chekhov's not in it. Scotty's in it because he voices a bunch of different characters,
yes,
too.
Yes, that's right. But yeah, Chekhov's not in it, and he's replaced by a lion creature.
Yeah, I'm interested in seeing sci-fi ideas that couldn't be done not in animation.
Well, the most notable episode of that, just to touch on it, is there's a race of people who clone Spock and make him a giant.
Yeah.
So there's just a giant Spock running around.
That's fantastic. See, I'm on board. I'm on board. You know what? I started at the beginning, so I want to look at
it
all.
You want to do it all the way.
But I'm taking my time. I'm not making a chore out of this. There's plenty of stuff to chew on. I'm taking my time with all of this. My last point and my last interesting thing that I was like, huh, is, so the joke is William Shatner is a bad actor. William Shatner overacts. He actually does two things. He underacts and then overacts.
Yeah.
He oscillates from very, very, very little to, like, huge.
He does loud,
quiet,
loud.
But he's not bad. He's good.
Yeah, when he's quiet, I think, like, he's actually a really good actor.
Yeah, he's not bad.
And you know what is another thing I noticed? When people talk about in, like, later series, when they make a particularly funny episode or like a joke.
Yeah.
And people go, oh, you know, they were going back to like, oh, Gene wouldn't have put a joke in his episodes or whatever.
Yeah.
It's like, Star Trek, the original series is full of like Kirk and Spock and McCoy making like really sharp quips to each other.
Yeah. Yeah. It definitely has humor. Even in its sillier episodes, it knows that this is a silly episode. You know, like that, the one with the Easter Bunny or whatever the fuck. Like, no one dies. Like, it's just, the whole episode is a wash. It's like, all right, that was all fun.
We went to the Easter Bunny planet.
Yeah, like, nothing happened. You know, like, they struck different tones. And yeah, there is comedy in it. Yeah, so it's both what I thought it was going to be and not at all. Because it's like one of these things where it's like, it's not like completely fresh to me, because in bits and pieces, I've seen all of this throughout pop culture.
Right.
I've seen it all. I've seen some of these moments before. But when you watch it all as one show and you get over the fact that like, okay, this is old. Okay, this is a joke. Okay, this has been parodied to death. Mm-hmm. And you're actually just watching it. It's not exactly what you think it's going to be.
It's good.
And you can see why... The people who loved it, and why when it was syndicated, it remained popular. So what do you think I should do next?
Well, you said you want to do the cartoon, but I think you just jump right to Next Gen.
Next Gen?
But just know that the first season is a little rough.
It's so funny. Everyone says that, too.
Well, because the first season is, it's all Roddenberry. So it's all like,
yeah.
What was the way someone explained it? Where it's like,
and we should, like, Roddenberry, he was a coke fiend. He was a womanizer.
He wasn't like a saint.
Yeah, he
like,
was a big old mess.
Him. Yeah.
He was a big old mess.
But season one of Next Gen, someone described it as like, because again, he brought on all his old writers as
well. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you've got people who had scripts lying around from the 60s, who were born in the 30s, writing a show in the late 80s.
Right. So it's,
and it wasn't until they really dusted the cut. They call it growing the beard.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah.
Like in the second season, Riker gets a beard.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, thank God.
Like, yeah, 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 yeah. Yeah.
And season two is like a little up and down, but like that's also the season that has, like, you could see it coming together. They have some really standout episodes.
How many seasons is this?
Seven.
Seven. Interesting. It's so interesting that the original series is like the sort of cornerstone of this big franchise, but there's so little of it.
And it's funny because that whole 90s era, all seven seasons.
So Deep Space had seven seasons?
Yes, and Voyager had seven
Voyager
seasons.
Voyager really went on that long? I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah, Voyager was from 95 to 2001.
In the book I read, Phasers on Stun, they really make an argument for, like, Voyager is going to have a swing around. Like, people are going to people are going to be like, you know what? This is actually very good.
Voyager is good. Voyager, it just had the misfortune of coming, like, sort of near the tail end of that run.
That 90s time.
And to a lot of people, it felt like, okay, we're rehashing a lot of next-gen stuff.
Yeah.
Because they never, unlike Deep Space Nine, which, like, really dug into its premise and got, like, really good and really meaty, Voyager went kind of back to Monster of the Week kind of stuff.
It begins with the premise of they're lost in space, and then they kind of...
Right, and that's the big critique is that for a show about like a ship lost in the Delta Quadrant to sort of be a Monster of the Week is kind of like, okay, so do we care about getting back to...
Right.
Like there's some great two-parters. There's an especially great one where fucking Kurtwood Smith is the villain.
Oh, really?
And he's great. Where basically
does he call Janeway a bitch? Bitches leave.
Bitches leave. Oh, I love that in RoboCop. But that whole episode, the two-parter, is basically they get stuck in a time loop where he plays a guy who's trying to recreate a planet.
Uh-huh.
Like with some time device. And he can't get it quite perfect. And you learn that he's trying to, like, save his wife because his wife died. But they're stuck in this loop where they keep going through, like, this entire year where their ship gets more and more wrecked.
Mm-hmm.
And by the end of it, I'm not going to spoil it, but, like, something happens and it gets reset. So now they're fine again. So you get, so there are a lot of episodes of Voyager where, like, you get a taste of what would happen if we really committed to the idea of, like, hey, they're running out of supplies and, like, the ship is falling apart.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But then, like, a lot of times they're, like, very known for, like, we're just going to snap back.
Okay.
Oh, and, like, some stuff, like, will happen. We just won't discuss. Like, there's an episode in season two that I can't, like, another friend of mine is watching Voyager for the first time right now, and they're almost up to it. And I was like, you need to tell me when you get past this episode. Because there's a character on the show who's an ensign, Harry Kim. He's supposed to be, like, the young... Like, he's the NC, he's the young guy on the show.
Yeah.
And in season two is an episode where they meet a parallel Voyager.
Mm-hmm.
Shows up and they're like, what's our ship doing here? And Harry Kim gets blown out of the ship during an incident. And then they figure out, you know, what to do. And they end up taking on the Harry Kim from the parallel Voyager. And they just never speak of it again. Like, at the end of the episode, like, Kim's talking to Janeway. He's like, isn't it a little weird that, like, you know, I was me, but I'm a different me, and the original me died?
They, and like, Janeway's they principal like, skin in him.
Yeah, and Janeway's just like, there's going to be a lot of weirdness in space, kid. And it's like, that's it? Like,
okay. We'll never speak of this again.
Or that the episode of Voyager where they break warp 10, where Tom Paris breaks warp 10 and then turns into a weird... fucking, like, lizard person.
Oh, yeah, I've heard about that.
Yeah, that's a fun episode to look up.
Well, I look forward to all of this fun stuff. Vin, thank you so much for being here. Thank you so much for having me in your home. This is PCMC, your number one podcast for fandom, non-toxic fandom.
Yeah, just your number one podcast.
Your number one podcast. We're available anywhere podcasts are found, and we're available on YouTubes. So, and find us on Instagram as well, at PCMC Pod. Oh. We end every episode by saying,
go bye-bye.